8 o'clock Eastern Daylight Saving Time. This is WJZ in New York, 770 on your dial.
Good morning. It's time now to bring you the latest war news in Germany and England. On this, the 627th day of war, we hear first from our staff reporter in the Reich. Go ahead, Berlin.
Hello, NBC. This is Charles Lanius in Berlin. Crete and the operations of the German parachutists there holds the most interest for the Germans today. But there is very little new information from this end to go on. It's pointed out here that the best indication regarding the situation was that the news that the larger part of the former Greek government has left Crete for Egypt already. They report that American government representatives had been asked by the German government to leave Paris came up for discussion here today. An authoritative source said that not only the government of the United States has been requested to recall their representatives, but all governments, 44 in all, had received similar demands. The American passengers from Zamzam, the Egyptian ship which was sunk by the Germans, are to be released. The women and children, it is said here, will be allowed their liberty almost immediately, but the men will be held until a thorough investigation has been completed. It was explained that many of these Americans had left their papers aboard the ship, and it's now necessary for the Germans to check up and ascertain to see if all the passengers who claim American citizenship are really Americans. On the report that the American consul at Bordeaux had seen the stranded Americans, it was said that in any case, an American consul would have an opportunity of seeing the passengers and convincing himself of their well-being. On the Wilhelmstrasse, Secretary of Navy Knox's statement on the freedom of the seas came in for some criticism today. An official said that Knox was only interested in the freedom of the seas for war shipments. Today's high command hasn't been released yet, but it's reported here that British bombers raided Heligoland yesterday afternoon under the cover of low-hanging clouds. Most of the bombs, it was said, were dropped in the water, and little damage was caused, although a number of civilians were injured. One of the British machines is said to have been shot down. When the British attempted to attack an objective on the French coast, the Germans say they shot down a bomber and 6 fighter planes. 5 Blenheim bombers were shot down in North Africa, according to the Germans, when the British made an attack on Saloum and Fort Capuzzo. Details of the Stuka attack on a British naval squadron in the Eastern Mediterranean yesterday are available this morning. The Germans say that a battleship, 5 cruisers, and 1 destroyer were hit directly by bombs. 4 of the warships are said to have been set on fire, and one of the cruisers, it's reported, was forced to stop its engines and showed a heavy list. The battleship, according to this version, got a direct hit with a heavy caliber bomb near the forecastle, while at the same time another lighter bomb landed on the deck. The Stuka pilots reported that the force of the bombs made the battleship heel over. The Germans assume that the battleship's capacity for action has been seriously impaired. One of the cruisers hit was directly amidship, and it's stated here that it immediately caught fire from stem to stern. 2 other cruisers are reported to have been set on fire when bombs fell on their decks. In addition to these warships, the Germans now believe a 2nd battleship and a 5th cruiser were damaged by bombs which exploded close to their hulls. Today is the 2nd anniversary of the Italo-German military alliance. Although little attention is being paid to the anniversary here, it's reported from Rome that the Italian press and radio are giving prominence to the occasion. The famous Pact of Steel, it said, was concluded to achieve a just peace. Here in Berlin, there's another tobacco shortage. This, I am told, is partly due to the difficulty in getting tobacco in quantity from southeastern Europe, and partly because of transportation difficulties. The railroads are heavily burdened with freight shipments, vital to Germany's war effort, and as one man explained to me, military necessities are placed above everything else. So tobacco users in Germany must cut down on their smokes, at least for the time being. Now it's a common sight to see queues of men lined up before the tobacco shops, waiting for their turn to get a cigar or the allotted number of cigarettes, which, by the way, is 5 at one time. And anyone who can get his 5 cigarettes isn't entitled to buy a cigar. The rule of selling 5 cigarettes to one person is strictly enforced. For the past week, I haven't been able to get more than 5 smokes at any time, at any tobacco shop, even in those where I'm well known. In connection with transportation, people in the general government, that's former Poland, are warned not to make unnecessary train trips during Whitsuntide. Special permits will be necessary for travelers, and it's announced that train service in that section will shortly be curtailed in favor of war transportation. This is Charles Lanius in Berlin. I now return you to NBC in New York.
In England, John Bull has already had his lunch, read his early afternoon paper, and is back at work. We take you now to the British capital for the latest news our staff reporter is permitted to broadcast there. Go ahead, London.
McVeigh in London. Little fresh news has arrived in London today of the fighting in Crete. Dispatches from Cairo say that fairly strenuous fighting was still going on in Crete last night as the German airborne troops kept up their attacks. Greek sources in Cairo said the British yesterday had the situation well in hand, and the attackers are reported to have suffered heavy losses. It is thought in London that it is possible that the German troops now being brought from Greece to Crete may be the first arrivals of a second airborne division. The Germans are making desperate efforts to land troops by air. And it isn't thought here that the German high command will end the attacks until the Germans suffer such heavy losses that the attack seems hopeless. It's believed the Germans may follow their air landings by trying to send tanks ashore from boats. It isn't known in London whether the parachute troops got control of any airfields, but it seems that most of the parachutists were destroyed or captured. And the battle now raging is believed to be with a full airborne division landed by troop carriers. The British yesterday challenged German control of the air over both Germany and occupied France. A small force of British bombers made a successful surprise attack on the German naval base of Heligoland during the afternoon. They lost one plane. The British plane swept over the island at a height of only 40 to 50 feet through a hail of anti-aircraft fire. Docks south of the island and the center of the town were bombed. The island was taken by surprise, and a football game was in progress when the raid began. Another force of British bombers, escorted by a large formation of fighters, attacked a power station and oil refinery near Bethune, France, in daylight yesterday afternoon. German fighters engaged them, but direct hits were made on both objectives. The British lost 6 fighters and 1 bomber. They shot down 5 fighters. In British eyes, it is clear today that a new stage in Vichy's collaboration with Germany has been reached. Because of this open cooperation, British policy toward Vichy France is being remolded. All along, the British have tended to look on Vichy as the unwilling tool of Germany, which should be encouraged to offer as much resistance as possible to German demands. Now, however, that policy is ended, and evidence of how definitely the British have changed their views will be forthcoming in the very near future. Vichy's recent actions are taken by official circles here as incompatible with French honor. And Admiral Darlan is being bitterly criticized for his apparent readiness to stretch passive cooperation with the Germans into active collaboration. Authoritative quarters in London today confirmed reports of German infiltration into French Morocco. The German Armistice Commission, it is stated, consists of several hundred men, mostly German officers. It is divided into a naval and military section and an industrial and economic section. These have headquarters in 2 big towns, and subcommissions are quartered in almost all other towns and villages of the territory. In addition, there has been a steady infiltration of German tourists. These now number several hundred and work in close contact with the Armistice Commission, taking their orders from the commission. The announcement by the Vichy ambassador in Washington that Germans and Italians have the right under the armistice terms to control all French aerodromes, even in the colonies such as Syria and Dakar, has been received by the British as a definite indication of how far Vichy will go. From all reports, the complete censorship in occupied and unoccupied France has kept the French people in ignorance of what their leaders are doing. Reliable French quarters in London believe that even many officials in the French colonies may be unaware of how completely Vichy has given in. As British observers see the situation, Vichy has decided that America is powerless to do anything in Europe against Germany. So the Vichy leaders are willing to do everything they can to help Germany to a quick victory over Britain. The diplomatic correspondent of the London Times says there is reason to suspect that German troops may have been conveyed across the Mediterranean to Africa straight from the French ports of Marseille and Toulon. As for the statement, the original armistice terms provided that aerodromes in unoccupied territory should be subjected to German and Italian supervision. British commentators point out that at the moment this was signed, the intention was to keep French planes from flying to Britain. Both Marshal Pétain and other high Vichy leaders, it is stated, have publicly announced that territory under French control would not be used by Germany to prepare attacks against British forces. In other words, if the Germans are allowed to use Syria, Marseille, Toulon, French North Africa, and Dakar as bases, then the British don't see much difference between these areas and the territory of Germany itself. This is John McVane in London, returning you to the National Broadcasting Company in New York.
Charles Lanius in Berlin and John McVane in London have just given us the latest news in Germany and England on the war. Now Earl Godwin reports from our newsroom in Washington.
Good morning, folks. Mayor LaGuardia is due to come to Washington today to assume command of the Office of Civilian Defense, which may result in one of the most amazing nationwide organizations that we have ever put over. And congressional circles hear that the Office of Production Management is asking the Army to ask Congress for another $4 billion for tanks and planes. One of the oddities of the situation is that the bottleneck is not in the plants, but in the lack of orders and the OPM, that is, Bill Knutson and his crowd, used to dealing with money and tremendous orders, want a lot of orders on hand so they can work with them. You know, there are half a dozen shuffling, queer-looking pickets carrying homemade, sometimes misspelled signs led by a shabby-looking chap who carries an old-fashioned lighted oil lantern, which he calls the Light of Liberty. They walk back and forth, 24 hours a day, right in front of the White House here. They are picketing the president in protest against possible wars and protesting against defense and convoys. They've been doing this for a month, and it has been generally conceded they are communists or a group acting as a red front, or although they call themselves the American Peace Mobilization. Several young men in United States uniform have stopped, looked, and have taken a sock at the jaws of one or two of these picketers, and for that upsurge of red-blooded American patriotism or whatever, they have been hustled off by the minions of the law. It now develops, before the Revive Dies Committee at the Capitol, that the Peace Mobilization Group is charged with being just one more stooge for Stalin or a front for the Communist Party. Already, close-lipped Secret Service agents have recognized some of the same old communist agitators who come down here leading various movements from time to time, all with high-sounding names, but always charged with being camouflage for the red political organization in this country. But for some reason or other, it has always been a very much hush-hush affair. The Dies Committee, however, with two women investigators, now allege that the White House pickets are a part of the American peace mobilization, which the Dies Committee folks say has little to do with peace, but is quite active undercover in strikes in defense industry, in spreading anti-selective service influence, and hews right straight along the Communist Party line. At least so they testified yesterday. Incidentally, the Washington police force, always at low ebb in point of numbers, has had to detach 25 much-needed officers to see to it there be no more jaw-socking and that these picketers picket with all the solemnity of the rights of free speech. I asked an official of the protective forces of the government here if I, for instance, might join these pickets carrying a sign reading, say, "Eat at Joe's." He said solemnly, no, he didn't think so. However, under the majestic protection of the police regulations, as they are interpreted in Washington, it would be legal, and I would have police protection, as these gentlemen have protection as they picket, to carry signs working against the country's safety and the defense program. And that's all from Washington at this time.
This has been our regular weekday morning roundup of reports from our news staff at home and abroad. More news over this station at frequent intervals during the day. Consult your newspaper for our program and news schedule. This is the National Broadcasting Company, RCA Building, Radio City, New York.